Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, in the second half of today's show, we'll share a message of hope on a topic that is quite frankly difficult for some people to talk about, but it is very important, and that is human trafficking. It's the third largest international crime industry in the world and the fastest growing. If you think it's not a big issue here in the Northwest, well, sadly, I have to report that Seattle is the third most active metropolis in the U.S. for child prostitution. But thanks to my second guest, Carol Lawyer, there is a new center for victims opened here right in Bellevue. She's the founder of Escape to Peace, and earlier this month, she opened the center, and the hope there is to provide survivors of trafficking with a physical refuge and, of course, help them to heal and find hope in life. We'll also hear from Elaine Adams, herself a survivor of sex trafficking and now the program director of Escape to Peace. She'll be joining Carol in the second half of today's show. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome psychotherapist, writer, and speaker Shira Block to the show. She's the author of Way Home, Step by Miracles, A Practical Guide to Achieving Your Dreams, and the co-author of When Your Parent Moves In, Every Adult Child's Guide to Living with an Aging Parent. Quite timely in today's economy. She conducts workshops and seminars nationwide and guest blogs on relationship and family issues for many popular publications. And she's written a new book. It is a novel. It's called Limerence. Be careful what you tell yourself. Shira Block, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Well, first of all, we have to ask what limerence means. It's the name of your book, but it's also a term that describes a psychological condition. So tell us what limerence means.
Right. Limerence is a psychological diagnosis. It's an obsessive compulsive disorder, but it has to do with love. So if you've ever met someone who becomes infatuated or obsessed with another person that they're not in a relationship and they build this whole fantasy around, in many cases, they may have a condition of limerence.
And so as a psychotherapist, I'm curious, do you see many people who suffer from this?
Well, I see smaller versions of it. So, for example, someone will have one date and all of a sudden they build this fantasy around what this relationship means. So they have a ball of relationship desire that they place on people without seeing who this person is, which, of course, leads into the topic of this particular book.
Right, right. And I know you've written, I mentioned a couple of the nonfiction books that you've written. You didn't want to do this particular piece of work as a piece of nonfiction. You wanted to do it as a novel, but pour your extensive experience as a psychotherapist into the story to give it a kind of psychological twist. Why did you choose to do it that way?
A lot of these topics are way too sensitive. And if you just, you know, I was worried that if I came out and said, here are the people that are have, you know, this particular condition, or you're subject to, you know, possible dating fraud, it just felt too harsh and too intense. I wanted to give people an option to take it in a little more slowly and in a beach read environment. So I created a fun and upbeat book that is multi-layered, that gives people the opportunity, if they choose, to see the deeper message around emotional cheating, around catfishing, and just all around the culture of lying.
Right, right. So we're going to talk about emotional cheating and about catfishing in a few minutes. But let's just look at the book a bit, because I said to you before we came live, I picked it up to look at the first couple of pages and I got quite drawn into it.
Oh, that's so nice.
But I loved in the acknowledgements, you begin your book, as many authors do, with an acknowledgement to AJ. And you say, thank you for agreeing not to read this book until you're 35. So assuming AJ is a child of yours.
Yeah. AJ is my 16-year-old daughter. And I'm sure with access to the internet, she's seen many things I don't want her to see, but I don't want her to see it or hear it coming out of my mouth.
I just want to say, I'm sure she has heard much worse by now, but it is different when it comes from a parent.
Oh, I think she would be permanently hat drawn over her eyes, never making eye contact again.
And so let's tell listeners a little bit about the story. Let's take a quick synopsis of this. We find out very, very quickly that the protagonist is Jackie Baker. She's 33 years old, and she's a phone sex operator. But she's not what we might think of as typically somebody who choose to do that kind of work. And you know, for all intents and purposes, she's happily married. She's got this ideal life, and yet here she is a phone sex operator. So tell us how you came up with the storyline.
All right. So the idea for the phone sex itself came up. It was actually my husband's fault. I do a lot of counseling. I do a lot of counseling and goal setting with people over the phone because I have clients all over the world. And one day he came in and he said, "You're not a psychotherapist. You're a phone sex operator." And I said to him, "Why, yes, I am." And I thought, oh, which of course I'm not, but I thought that would be an interesting cover. But what I wanted for my main character is I wanted her to have a way to deny culpability for her bad behavior. She's not having an affair. She's home when her kids get home, but she talks to men on the phone all day without her husband knowing. And so I'm setting up with a dramatic sense of emotional cheating that she can deny she's doing.
And yet it's not always easy for her. She has some calls which are pretty gruesome, right?
She really, well, that's the nature of it. There is nothing that's deceptive or in this realm that's actually upbeat or clean or even feel good. She tries to convince herself there's nothing wrong with this and that it's fun and that her clients love her, but she's creating a series of lies that is destroying her otherwise pretty great marriage.
And you cover really a lot of issues in the book because she lives in this world of pretense, really. And, you know, she has issues with her mother and her father. She has an attachment to one of the clients at some point.
Yeah.
And she gets to a point where after all these years of lies and secrets, I mean, secrets, you know, up the wazoo here.
Right.
She can't tell which end is up.
It's funny. It's like that way with many people in that you start with a little white lie. And once you cross the line, it becomes easier and easier. She started with a little lie and it got bigger and bigger and bigger until she absolutely doesn't know what's the truth anymore, and she can't see the truth when it's in front of her.
Right. So let's talk about the husband, because he plays an integral role in the book, too, Jake. What's his role?
All right, I don't believe in relationships there's one victim and there's one perpetrator. I think the lines are a little shady. And so he overall is a great guy, but he is seeing his wife disintegrate, and he's not working hard enough to find out why. He also is creating some of the problems through a lack of communication, of prioritizing himself, not being truly collaborative. So even though he really is a great guy, there's a way that his selfishness and his self-focus help add to the problem. It's easy to read this book and say, oh, she's the problem, he's great. But as you move on, you see both sides of people's stories as it unfolds.
Yeah, and there's a line in here that probably many stay-at-home wives might relate to, because she, Jackie, questions, you know, at what point was I demoted from wife to errand girl?
Right. Right, and I think a lot of us have said that as we get our list of things to do, and we might have made ourselves the errand girl.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else did.
Right.
But again, it's how we feel. There's a theme throughout this book, and it's actually centuries old. It says we don't see things as they are. We see them as we are. She's a perfect example of having a lens that she sees the world through, and that's the lens of a victim.
Right, right.
And she has, yeah, and in some ways, we all have the lens we see the world through. Some of them great lenses that allow us to move forward, and other lenses that actually keep us stuck in our patterns.
And she's really gets involved in the sex operator, the phone sex, as a phone sex operator, as I understand it from the book. She really did that just so she'd have a little bit of money that she'd made herself.
She doesn't need the money. It's more an act of defiance and independence. And truthfully, a piece of it, too, is she wanted somebody to talk to.
Right.
And she wanted to feel important. So, she comes from a fairly affluent, family life. There's a lot she has, but what she's missing is that feeling of connection. And so what she's doing is she's behaving in a way that actually makes her less connected to the real people around her, and she creates fantasies with the people on the phone. Because when you see these conversations or listen to these conversations, she'll say, wow, that was great, or I feel connected to my clients, and the reader should be squeegeeing out their ear and saying, really? That's connection? It's not erotic. It's like a bright light is being shown on it.
Right. Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about emotional cheating, because this is a big thing with everybody on the internet today, everybody having their little secret Facebook accounts and email chats. It's a big, big issue for many people. Yeah. So let's take a quick break so I don't have to interrupt you during that. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Shira Block. She's a psychotherapist. Her new book is called Limerence. It is a novel, a limerence. Be careful what you tell yourself. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
It's me, your heart. High blood pressure is serious, and if you think I'm just going to keep ticking away, you're wrong. I can quit whenever I want, but I like my job. Just treat me better. Maybe we can do some exercise on occasion? After all, we're in this together.
Don't let your heart quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get yours to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair airs live every Monday at noon. And now you can also catch the show during drive time at 6 a.m. every Friday. Hear from New York Times bestselling authors, innovative business leaders, cutting-edge health and wellness professionals, award-winning journalists, filmmakers, explorers, and adventurers. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, Mondays at noon Pacific time and Fridays at 6 a.m. right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, bringing you topics ranging from meditation to conservation, business and careers to health and wealth.
Broaden your horizons. You'll be amazed at all the topics we cover on Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Shira Block. She's a psychotherapist. She's also a lecturer, writer, and personal coach. And she's the author of the book we're talking about right now, Limerence. Be careful what you tell yourselves. And Shira, for those who are just joining us, I wonder if you'd just share again what limerence means.
Limerence is an obsessive infatuation with another person, so much so that it can interfere with the ability to see life and relationships clearly. So it's an obsessive compulsive disorder having to do with love and relationships.
Perfect. And we talked in the first segment about the book and how the protagonist, Jackie Baker, basically has lost touch with reality and she's spinning out of control. And that you cover many, many issues in the book, and one of them is emotional cheating. That's a big issue throughout this entire book. And it's a big issue in life, and you were saying during the break that it's a big issue for you as a psychotherapist in how many patients you see with this issue. So talk to us about that, if you would.
Yes. First of all, emotional cheating is any kind of relationship that interferes or creates a separation between a person and their primary relationship. So, for example, it has nothing to do with an actual sexual encounter. It has to do with the way you divide your emotions. So people think it's pretty innocuous to have a work wife or a work husband. But if you're sharing information with that person that alienates your partner by not talking to your partner, it can create a real break in trust. And by the way, just as an aside, emotional cheating doesn't necessarily have to be with a person. You can have the same feeling of being emotionally cheated on if your spouse is obsessed with video games or watching pornography. It has the same effect.
Oh, interesting. But it's that alienation, right?
It's the alienation of affection because the person is giving it to something or someone else as opposed to doing the work to stay connected to you.
Mm. So this break in trust, it's a big thing because trust is everything in a relationship, whether it's work-wise or personal or a love interest, really. But, you know, I've heard people joke in the workplace, oh, this is my work husband and this is my work wife, whatever. And they do think it's innocuous. But talk to us a bit about the kind of rift it can cause between a married couple.
You know, it can be innocuous. It depends on how it's done, if it's kept secret. But the way it creates a rift is by nature, and an emotional infidelity creates more lies and more deception. So I'll be stereotypical for just one moment. Let's say the husband comes home after a long day at work, the wife just came home, and she wants to talk to her husband, but he knows he has a phone call with his work wife on the phone upstairs. So he might say, I have a couple of more work things to take care of. I'll be right down. And instead, he's talking about movies with his work spouse. The wife feels that something is keeping them separate. But he says, oh, it's nothing. I was just talking to Jill from the office. We have a couple of projects we're working on. She has the feeling that something's going on, but she's a bad person if she brings it up.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's already spoken about his day and issues with different people, and he doesn't want to talk to his wife about it. Why not? It's because he's sharing it somewhere else. And
right.
So it's complicated.
It is complicated, and you can see that it would force a gap there almost between them because, you know, the wife or husband whoever's being left out would feel that left out.
Right. Well, what's worse is that if the cheating spouse then says, no, nothing's wrong, it's in your imagination. This is where you begin to doubt yourself, and now you can't trust yourself and your own perceptions. That's when not only the relationship deteriorates, but you as a person does as well, because now you think, oh, am I just being jealous? Am I being unreasonable? And it creates so many problems.
Yeah, and we, as women especially, have a tendency to second-guess ourselves and tell ourselves we're just being silly. So what do we do about that? If we have this feeling that our mate, if you will, is having this emotional affair with someone, how do we handle that?
Oh, in my experience, it doesn't work to just talk about your feelings. And the reason for that is because the partner will tend to poo-poo them or swipe them aside. Oh, you're just being silly. So what needs to happen is the conversation needs to come up in terms of what is emotional cheating. I feel you're talking to Janet instead of me, and I'm feeling left out, as opposed to what the other person is doing. Like you want to talk about the situation as practically as possible with actual facts.
Okay.
You come home every day and you get on the phone for 2 hours with someone from work and then you're too tired to speak to me. I would like to propose, come home, talk to me first, and then if you have leftover energy, then talk to other people. It's making me feel separate from you.
Right, so don't give me the leftover energy.
That's right. But you have to talk about it. You can't say, it doesn't work to say things like, you know, what's going on between you and Janet? Because all he has to say is nothing, you're being jealous. or nothing, you're being too sensitive. If someone tells you you're being too sensitive, that is the biggest red flag there is.
Okay, interesting. I'm wondering how many people out there are thinking, I've just been told that.
Because what that does is that undermines your emotions and your feelings.
Yes. Yes, and it shuts you down, basically. It's a way of shutting people down.
Right. And especially with women, even as we are becoming more and more powerful in our own lives, women have a tendency, at least in my 25-year practice, to take too much responsibility for a relationship. As opposed to taking their half, they tend to take more.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that we're told, take 100% responsibility, and that really means for our own actions, not for somebody
Correct.
Else's actions. Yeah, it took
Correct.
Me a while to understand that.
Right.
So let's talk about another huge issue, especially with online dating, and that's catfishing. So for someone who's not familiar with that, let's define what it is.
Catfishing is when a person creates a false persona online to have their way. It can be for nefarious reasons. It can be to get money. It can be just to create the illusion of romance and be able to hang up and never talk to the person again. It started many, many years ago. A lot of times it happened with the elderly. My grandmother in her 80s fell prey to a catfish. Her husband just died, and he professed love and then asked her to make an investment in his company.
Okay.
And she lost all her money.
Mm-hmm.
Now it happens so much more often because of all the online dating. You have a person who is aching to connect. The catfish, throws out the line and pretends to create this wonderful connection and appreciation and conversation, but then they ask for things.
I mean, I've seen these shows. I've seen Catfish the Show, which primarily deals with younger people. And then I've seen on Dr. Phil where people have, older people have lost literally everything. And I want to talk to you about this because this just blows my mind. When they've been communicating for, let's say, 6 months or a year, they've never met. They, quote, get engaged online. Sometimes they've never even had a video chat with this person. So it could be anybody, on the end of that. What is causing people to have relationships like that? Is it low self-esteem or is it the belief they don't deserve?
No, you know what? I want to dispel that there's something inherently broken about the person who falls for that. So I'd like to dispel that right now.
Right.
Because that's, in a way, victim blaming.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it happens, because I've seen many clients who have been powerful, wonderful women who fell into this trap. So, for example, you're the CEO of a company. You're strong. You're independent. And you haven't met a man who you can connect with who isn't threatened by your success. And all of a sudden, you start talking to someone on the phone who's as busy as you are. And you have a joyful, intimate conversation. And he says, can I call you in a few days? And you have another one. And so you're building this sense of connection. You haven't met the person yet, but imagine you have nothing going on. You have an emptiness that needs to be filled. And this person seemingly fills this hole. And you start talking more, and you start looking forward to the conversation, and now you plan to get together, but you live in different cities, and one thing after another comes up and you can't meet, but you understand because you're busy too, and you know how things come up. It just builds over time. It's not as common, at least in my experience, that people talk for a year. Usually it's a few months.
Right.
Where things start getting a little funny.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine how busy you are. Maybe you can't get together with someone for an entire month. It happens, but you're still talking every day. And before you go to bed, you get a nice phone call or a nice text or a text through the day. It makes you feel good, and it starts filling up that hole that you have.
Right. So what are some of the questions then? If this is the way it happens very often, and it happens to men as well as women.
It does. It does.
I've seen many men impacted by this.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the things we should start questioning?
All right. The first thing is, and it's, it is hard to do this. It's like a person is afraid to ask the real question because the relationship might end. First thing is you have a video chat, because this way you know the voice and the face match. It doesn't work anymore just to be texting and just to be talking on the phone. So video chat, everyone has it on their phone, or they can get free Skype. That's the first thing.
They do. And I'm going to just interject here, because on the show Catfish, I have seen couples that have dated online, quote, for a year and never had a video chat. And there's always been, oh, you know, I'm having to use a friend's phone, or I can't because we get bad reception, or my battery's low. And it,
right.
And people still buy the excuse.
Right. Well, I think that if this becomes more of a big topic of conversation, the more savvy the potential victim becomes and doesn't keep excusing it.
Mm-hmm.
So if 2 weeks go by and you're unable to have a video chat, I would say chances are this isn't real.
Right.
If after 3 months you're unable to meet, then my feeling is that's where you draw the line, and it's unlikely that it's real. And so you have to say, you know, you just have to tell yourself, all right, it might seem real and feel real, but this is where I draw the line in the sand. I can't do this forever. So you have a deadline for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because truthfully, if you said, let's have a video conversation, I can just pick up my phone right now.
Right, right. Yeah. So let's look at this, Shira, because family is when families get involved and they are telling the person who's being catfished, hey, this guy or this woman isn't real. They're just using you. They just want your money. They're stringing you along. The person who's being catfished doesn't want to hear that. And in fact, in many cases, won't hear that. So as a family member, how do you help someone through this?
This is really difficult because you can't make someone be ready to hear something. It's like telling a person that they're an alcoholic. They may not accept until they're ready to hear it. We can't be forced into a growth pattern. One of the things that I've seen with my clients is family members who do want to help. My suggestion is tell them that you'll support this relationship, and if you need to give them money, it has to be in person, and you'll pick that person up from the airport if they can't do it. I have one client who's in a wheelchair, and the person said, I can't come because I won't have a ride from the airport. And so I told the mother, I know you don't agree with this relationship, but tell him that you'll pick him up at the airport to eliminate the problem. And then, of course, he never came.
Mm.
So belittling or telling the person, you're wrong, and this relationship is fake, doesn't necessarily help. You let them know once, and then you be there for when it breaks down, when it explodes, because ultimately it always does.
Yeah, and very, very difficult. And
excruciating.
It must be terribly hard for people to rebuild trust after that, too.
The person you can't trust is yourself, because then the person always looks back and said, I should have realized when this happened.
Right.
Or I should have realized when that happened. Or, I mean, there's so many clues that people give, but as trusting people and people wanting to connect, sometimes it's hard to see that.
And so what do you tell people who have been catfished?
I spend a lot of time reminding them that they were a victim and they're not stupid, and these people are trained on some level to be con artists. And they are excellent at what they do. And so I just try to remind people that they set out to harm, and most people are not built to deal with that.
Right.
We go about life in a more trusting way. And if we want something and someone's offering, I mean, imagine you're starving and someone says, here's a piece of bread. It's not normal to think, I wonder if it's poisoned.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I see your point on that. Well, I thank you, Shira Block, for being with us today. The book is called Limerence. It's a novel, but Limerence, Be Careful What You Tell Yourself. You can find out more about Shira and her work at shirablock.com. A final quick thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Shira.
That have a lot of space for yourself and your experience, but always ask the right questions. Does this make sense? Is it suspicious? And if it does, it probably is.
Okay, good words to live by there. Thanks for being with us. Appreciate
your
time.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Elaine Adams and Carol Lawyer of Escape to Peace Center right here in Bellevue. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please stay with us.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services, if you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga, we cover the world of animals. This week, November 6th, it's Shelter Rescue Sanctuary and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday. We'll check in with local shelters and rescues to find out how they're doing and what kind of help they need. Plus, Friends of Woodland Park Zoo Elephants, Aline Fortgain, will join us with all the latest details about our beloved bamboo. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Get your daily dose of variety. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Well, we are now joined by Carol Lawyer, founder and chairman of the board of Escape to Peace, and by Elaine Adams, sex trafficking survivor, program director for Escape to Peace, which is a center here in Bellevue. We'll hear more about that in just a moment. I'm going to talk with Carol first of all and just tell you a little bit more about her. She founded Escape to Peace in 2013 to bring awareness to the issue of human trafficking in King County. We don't like to think it happens here, but it's happening everywhere, as they said at the top of the hour. She's also the owner of Truth Spa, which she opened in 2008, and has been involved in management and leadership programs for almost 20 years, including the executive program at the University of Washington Business School. Carol Lawyer, welcome to the show today.
Thank you.
I'm pleased to have you here. I was reading, I think it was the Bellevue Reporter, and I saw about this center that you've just opened, and I thought that's definitely something we need to talk about on the show. But I think it's fair to say that civic engagement has been a big part of your life. But I think, suspect maybe from reading some of the material that you had a change in direction when you went to Thailand. So tell us about the trip to Thailand.
Okay. In 2012, I went to Thailand on a mission and saw thousands of girls on the street being trafficked.
What do you mean by mission?
I went with a nonprofit. And I was the only one outside of a particular church, but a mission being a prayerful. You were there at part of the time to help the girls or the the trafficked, but also we are praying in different areas for other things that happened in Padier. So when I was there, we saw every day thousands of girls on the street. And we would ask them to dinner, and they didn't speak English, so, but they could understand us because most of the men that bought them were English-speaking men. So we would bring them to dinner to get to know them and just try to create a relationship or a little bit of trust, which is very difficult. Bring them to dinner, and most of the time, that wasn't hard to do. We would have to buy them out of the bar, and then they'd come to a safe home with us. We would introduce the safe home and let them know how the people that were there could help them. Most of the time, they didn't stay because it's a different. It's because of poverty why that happens there. But as
they get into sex trafficking because of poverty.
Because of poverty.
Okay.
Yes.
And some of these girls are as young as.
I saw as young as a 4-year-old being sold, and I talked to as young as a 12-year-old, and I saw all that whole range up into the early 30s.
Yeah, I don't know if this is true, but I've watched a lot of documentaries on this, and I at that particular time, this was a few years ago, and statistics may have changed, but a large portion of the men who were actually going there were American or German.
Yes.
Huge portion.
Very, yeah. It was the weirdest thing because as you drive down the streets and all the bars are open, you know, there's no walls at all, and you just see pretty much white men just all, and it was just different.
Right. So you're trying to help these girls by saying, hey, there's another way, taking them out to dinner, but then there's little else really that you can do for them after that, I'm guessing.
There are a lot of different programs in Thailand, and they would guarantee them a certain amount of money because they're there because they're providing for their family that live out in the country. But these, I think the fact that there's not jobs for them, mm-hmm. and they don't speak English, so it's hard to leave Thailand and move to another country where they could. That would help them be more resourceful.
And in some cases, I mean, let's be honest, some cases the parents have put them into those situations,
right?
That's right. For money.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So you come back to the States and think what?
Well, when I was there, I thought about, it's happening here. Why isn't anyone doing this? And I didn't understand the issue here as much. So when I came back, I decided that I would educate myself on what's happening here, and it is more unseen, but I began to do talks and tell people about my mission in Thailand. And what I found was that at the end of each of my talks, somebody would come and tell me about a personal situation of theirs. And that's when I started to form Escape to Peace. And we talked a lot with the board members about, okay, fine, it's great to create this awareness, but what do we do with all these people who need help?
Right, right.
And so we spent years trying to figure that out.
And so let's just put this in perspective here, because I saw on your website that Seattle is the third largest metropolis for active child prostitution. And we're talking here, some of those, the average age is like 12 to 14 years old, those girls.
Correct.
Yeah. And 76% of sexual transactions with underage girls are on the internet. And this was interesting. In King County, a study conducted over a 24-hour period revealed 8,800 people online soliciting themselves and 27,000 soliciting to buy right here in King County.
Yep.
It's staggering.
It is.
Yeah. So at what point did you decide to come up? You'd already formed this organization, Escape to Peace, but at what point did you think about the center, which opened just this month, right?
Yes, it's opening. The doors open on Wednesday. Probably a year or more ago, we decided that what was needed was a center where these youth we could provide life skills and job skills. And we also do trauma therapy, and I've been studying with a foundation in Canada to help with the trauma that lies in their body. So we will be helping them with that too.
Mm. How many of the girls that you see, and I know the center's not open until Wednesday, but how many of the ones that you've come into contact with go into it voluntarily versus are being forced into it?
I haven't met any that have gone into it voluntarily.
So it's all forced.
Yes. Okay.
And we're not talking because, you know, I'm sure some people think it's men who are forcing them, but there are many women who are forcing people into this. I saw an undercover show in London where the sex trafficking center was run by only women, and they were just pulling in foreign girls and saying, hey, I've got great living for you. And they were sex slaves until somebody rescued them out of there.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. So what do you hope that the center is going to achieve? You want to give them the life skills. How's that going to happen?
Well, we will start out with, we'll be there to feed them, to bring them to doctor appointments or other appointments, and to give them toiletries. We will be there to really navigate where the direction that they want to go with their life. And we will show them ways that their life can be transformed.
And the big question I think I have is, are the girls finding you? How are you reaching out to the girls? How are they going to know about this center?
Yeah.
And that's partly why we're doing this show today.
Right. Yes, we're connected with the Bellevue Police Department. The caseworkers, they have experience in King County, and we will be hanging flyers in clinics and different places that the girls go to, but it will eventually become word of mouth.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I've been talking with Carol Lawyer. We'll also hear from Elaine Adams, who's program director for Escape to Peace, that's right here in Bellevue. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Please stay with us.
Hi. I found a toy dinosaur over on the playground by Smith Street. It had this phone number on it, and, well, I just wanted to make sure the dinosaur made it back to its little owner.
Yeah. Hi. I think I found your kid's stuffed animal near the swing set. Just want to call. I'm sure she misses it.
I know my son gets super attached to the smallest things, even a fire truck, and I'd be happy to drop it off. The toy was a little muddy, so I cleaned it up, and it's good to go whenever you're around.
When I found the little sippy cup, I just had to give you a call. It's for a kid, you know?
We'd do anything for kids. Yet 1 in 6 children in the U.S. struggle with hunger. Help end childhood hunger and give all of our kids the meals they need to grow. Learn how at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair airs live every Monday at noon. And now you can also catch the show during drive time at 6 a.m. every Friday. Hear from New York Times bestselling authors, innovative business leaders, cutting-edge health and wellness professionals, award-winning journalists, filmmakers, explorers, and adventurers. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair Mondays at noon Pacific time and Fridays at 6 a.m. right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, bringing you guests ranging from authors and filmmakers to explorers and dream makers.
Make us part of your daily routine. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and I'm pleased to have with me in the studio today two ladies who are making a huge difference in the lives of young girls that have been in the sex trafficking business. We heard from Carol Lawyer in the first part of the show, and I'm going to introduce Elaine Adams here. Elaine, I'm going to ask you to share some of your background with us, because all I really know is that you are a survivor of sex trafficking, and you are now the program director of Escape to Peace. So tell me, first of all, how you fell into the sex industry.
There was a grooming process prior to when I was 13 years old. I was actually raped by a family member who's connected to the person that, when I was 15 years old, told me that, oh, there's opportunity to dance and get paid for it. Love to dance. And this person I trust. And so she sent me out here to Bellevue with I was an older lady and another young lady that was a year younger than myself, but she had been in what we call the life for a couple of years. And so I went out to this bachelor party, and I was told that all we had to do is dance, but there's drugs and alcohol involved. And so we did it first, and then I was told, okay, you go in this room and you do whatever the guys, you know, ask you to do. And I was left in a room, and from then on, I was taken advantage of by several men. And so after that, when I finally, one man, the last man, decided to help me find my way out of the room and return.
Well, thank heavens for him, right?
Yeah.
And so how did you get out, and how did you turn your life around?
It was a gradual process. Some family members of mine who were also victims of sex trafficking in the life started going to church and had received Christ in their life. And so they came and picked me up and took me to church. And they worked with me for a few years. And eventually I call it weaned out of the life. I had support.
And so we're talking about Escape to Peace, the organization that is the center that's opening up in Bellevue just this week. How did you and Carol connect?
Well, through a mutual friend. Actually, she told Carol about myself, and because I was going around sharing my story and advocating for the victims with another organization, and she told me about Carol and their mission, and that Carol was having a fundraiser event. Before that, it was a video, right? Yeah, we made a video in reference to. Along with a couple other survivors, and so we made the video for Carol's event, and then she asked me to share, and so I spoke at her event last year, and we had conversation, and she told me about her trauma therapy, and actually I had sessions with her, and from then on we just build a relationship, and we're on the same mission. So
yeah, amazing. Amazing. Just the difference having those people step in front of you has made to your life, right? Mm-hmm. 'Cause some people don't get that lucky.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
So I want to ask you, Elaine, what kind of trauma you suffered. I mean, I can only imagine, but you tell me that, and then I'd like to ask Carol how she puts together her trauma therapy.
Well, I suffered a lot of trauma from childhood. Losing my father was in a home where domestic violence was present on the weekends. And from then on, my father suffered from mental illness, and I was very close to him. So I kind of worked with him as a little girl and counseled him. And from then on, it was a very violent death that I experienced with my father. And from then on, I was just almost like open game. And throughout the trauma from losing my father, being in the midst of that, it was a violent death involving him being shot in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, there was trauma after trauma after trauma. And so Carol, once we came together, in agreement far as on this mission to help survivors, we started dealing with the trauma that I have been traumatized with, because I've gone years consulting and empowering others, but I've never been really empowered. And that's where Carol came in at. And she helped me to realize that, there was trauma still residing in my body. Because I have been afflicted with, right now, MS, as well as other several diseases, disorders. But it was all due to the root of trauma. So
Right. So, Carol, how do you work with somebody who's been traumatized? Because I'm guessing, Elaine has had a very difficult childhood, a very difficult life most of her life, it sounds like. We don't realize when we're lucky enough to have both parents raise us, what some kids have to go through. And I'm guessing it's very different treatment for each person, but where do you begin?
Well, we always begin with today. We begin with where they are at today, because we don't want to get into the what we call the T0, which is really going to create a lot of anxiety, where they're going to continue to talk about the story. So when they are anytime we're traumatized or in these situations, they are the fight, flight, freeze. Well, when they're in the freeze and these things are happening, it's kind of an out-of-body experience. So this gets stuck in the body, and we work through sensations to disrupt that dysregulation. And they will feel that disruption through heat and tingling that leaves the body. And they learn how to use resources to help them move forward in their life.
Mm. And how many people can you accommodate at the center?
It's an hour session. So as far as like total in the whole center?
The whole center. Because you give them actual physical refuge, right? If somebody's coming out of the industry.
Yes. I mean, at any hour, I would say we could have about, depending on the amount of employees we have, maybe 30. We'll have tutors. We have different programs that will be going on there. But right now, it's just a matter. It's just open. But once we'll have teachers and tutors to help them get to their grade level, we'll have job skills and life skills. So they won't all be in the same program together. They'll be where they fit, depending on their healing.
Right. And so let's talk about the fundraiser, because you have a fundraiser coming up tomorrow. So tell us about that.
Well, the fundraiser, we have the head of CSEC, Kelly, and she's an attorney. So she will be there to talk about the problem, that this is a problem in our communities and it exists. And there are youth here. They're not coming from other countries. And then we have two neuropsychologists that I learned from, and they will be there to talk about trauma in the body and brain and how it's discharged to lead more healthy lives.
Okay. And let's just remind people of the numbers here, because, you know, Seattle, I mean, we're all about the environment. We're about healthy living. We don't want chemicals. We just, in our blind little bubble that we all live in, don't want to think it's happening here. But at any given time, 300 to 500 girls are involved in child prostitution right here in Seattle. And the average entry age is 12 to 14 years old, correct?
That's correct.
And what about boys? Do you know numbers on boys? Because I know boys are involved too.
Right. The numbers are very close. It's almost a 60-40 with girls and boys. We are at the Escape Center. We're going to work very hard to let them know that we are there for them, but there's not a lot of help for boys.
Mm. So, Elaine, we're almost right at the end of our segment. Very quick word. What would you like to let our listeners know about your journey, about the work you're doing now?
That it's going to take a whole community. It's not just we need from every aspect as far as profession, of life. It's going to take all of us to remedy this problem. And awareness, be aware, because it doesn't look like the media. It could be your daughter or a friend next door.
Right.
So we need to be aware that this can happen, and it is happening all over.
Yeah, so parents, grandparents, yes. Aunts, uncles, they sisters, they all need to be talking with each other and, you know, being aware of this. And Carol, what would you like to leave our listeners with?
I think it's very important that everyone learn to become educated on this issue so you can spot it, and that will help us all to be able to stop it.
And can you give us in like 30 seconds some of the things, if we're a parent, that we should be looking for in our child if we see differences?
You can look for maybe a tattoo, expensive clothing. You can look for your child being more secretive about their phone calls or where they were or what happened while they were gone. They're not going to be as open to tell you what they're doing.
And their behavior and their way they dress.
Okay. Yes. And so I'm guessing they kind of create a gap there between their parents and themselves.
Yes. Great.
And seeing whoever is out there grooming them as the answer to everything.
Especially on the internet.
Yes. Well, I thank you both for being with us today. Elaine Adams, a survivor of sex trafficking herself, now program director of Escape to Peace, and Carol Lawyer, the founder and chairman of the board of Escape to Peace. Thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
And listeners can find out more about the work that Escape to Peace is doing at escapetopeace.org. That's right. Yeah, I just want to make sure. EscapeToPeace.org. And you can go and take a look there and see at the amazing work they're doing. The fundraiser is tomorrow, and the center opens this week. So, ladies, I wish you all the best. Fantastic work you're doing, and very much needed, unfortunately, by the sound of it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for us this week. Questions or comments on today's show, you can reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. You can also email me at info@conversationslive.net. I'm on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. We'll see you next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.